more at shatterproof.org.
Soon I will be done with the troubles. 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 Soon I will be done with the troubles.
Hello, and thank you for listening to WMNF 88.5, the Sustainable Living Show, where you learn about all things sustainable every other Monday at 10 a.m. We have a great show today, so please stay tuned. We have a few amazing guests in here today. We have Bob Lindy and Renee Prince, and they're going to be talking about herbalism a little bit later. But first, we have Mark Wilfalk from the city of Tampa, and he has a awesome program and awesome show that's coming up. A recycling art show. So, Mark, if you want to kind of tell us about that.
Absolutely. Good morning. As mentioned, Mark Wilfalk. I'm the director for the Department of Solid Waste and Environmental Program Management, City of Tampa. Proud to announce, and I was just kind of looking over some of our facts, that this is actually our 13th year hosting our poetry and arts contest. We actually call it the 3 R's Arts Contest. And what it is a program that really kind of focuses on recycling, environmental management, environmental awareness, and we try to promote that through the school systems. So we encourage students in grades 4 through 12 to submit their best poetry or artwork depicting something that supports our recycling program. And let me tell you, we get a chance each year to highlight some of our local artists in the Bay Area. And I guess the caveat, what makes the whole program successful, is that the winning artwork is displayed on the side of our garbage trucks as they traverse the city for a whole year. So that successful student gets a chance to have their artwork displayed to the city, to the world, basically, for the entire year. And then there's also some other festivities that goes along with. They get to spend some time with the mayor and all that other good stuff. So we're really excited about the
contest. That's amazing, yeah. And what does the 3 R's stand for?
3 R's basically stands for reduce, reuse, recycle. And we encourage students to try to incorporate the 3 R's into their artwork.
I went online, and if you want to tell us exactly where we can go online to see this, because these artworks have already been submitted and they are available for you to see and vote on, right? Because it's not just, there's not just a board who is voting on this. This is up for the public where you can actually say and vote on the ones that you find are the best.
Absolutely.
Right?
If you go to tampagov.net/solid waste, you will see it right there on the front page of our website. Voting will end on March 7th, so we encourage everyone to go and vote for your favorite artwork, the one that catches your eye. But it will be available, and then we'll also have opportunities for folks to vote at the Gasparilla Arts Festival that's coming up soon.
That's awesome. And how many winners are there?
We'll have about 3 to 4 winners from each category. We usually do a elementary, a middle, and a high school art winner.
Wonderful. And if anybody has any questions, how would they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. Just have them give our office a call at 348-1146 if they have any questions or any, it's fairly straightforward. But I do want to say the best is yet to come because we're hoping that as we continue to grow this program, we also hope to continue to increase the awareness. But we also want to partner with more institutions out there. We're actually trying to develop a partnership with the McDonald's Training Center. And if you ever get a chance to see some of the artwork that some of the clients produce over there, simply amazing.
That's great. And are there any other recycling events that we should know about?
That's about it for now. We have, of course, we have Earth Day coming up, and we're always pretty supportive of that. You know, it's our heartbeat. So
wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming into the studios.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And so now, again, this is the Sustainable Living Show, 88.5 FM. And today we have myself, Tanya Vidovic. We have John Butts. And we actually have Frank Knox helping us in the studio today. And then our amazing herbalist guests. We have Renee Prince and Bob Lindy. Welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Great to be here.
So you guys have some pretty awesome events coming up and some classes. Is there an herbalist conference coming up?
We actually just finished the herbalist conference. We got back about 10 o'clock last night and just finished unpacking. So we've got a bunch of exciting events coming up here and then some out of state as well with some other herb conferences.
Wonderful. And that herb conference, that was local? Where was that?
That was out by Lake Wales area, and that was the Florida Herb Conference that we have every year. I think that was our 8th annual herb conference that we attended. So always been fun to both be there just helping people in the community. We had about 800 people there, as well as lecturing a couple of classes there.
And so for our listeners who may be a sustainable-minded but may not know what an herbalist is, can you kind of give us a definition or a broader understanding of what herbalism is and what herbalists do?
You know, I think if you asked any herbalist, they'd all give you a different answer.
So for our two herbalists in the rooms.
And even us, we'll give you a different answer as well. You know, it's funny, I was a Western herbalist first, and now I usually identify more as a Chinese herbalist since I use that diagnostic system. But for all of us, a lot see clients. We teach, we make medicine, we harvest medicine. I probably focus in on the teaching and the seeing clients a little bit more. And Renee has her own approach that she has as an herbalist.
It's very important, especially in the sustainable community, for everybody to remember that we have heritage food and medicine, and it's available to all of us, and it's just one generation of us missing out on that education, that it's lost knowledge. And it's important to understand that right here in our bioregion, we have food that's allotted to us that's wild, and medicine. And just because you have somebody like Bob or myself who works in a clinical setting, it doesn't mean that that doesn't make you somebody who can make medicine and help yourself or help your family with the food that you're ingesting.
And you guys both mentioned make medicine. What exactly is that? What do you mean by making medicine?
Renee's the medicine maker. I'll let her answer
that. No, we're both medicine makers. As clinical herbalists, it's our responsibility to make sure that our clients have the herbal medicine that's appropriate for them and balanced appropriately for them. But we also really like to encourage everybody to think of their food as medicine as well. So there's many ways to make medicine, right from a tea that everybody is used to, which we would call an infusion or a tisane, all the way to some kind of herbal extraction where we'd be using another solvent to pull a certain constituent out. And that's really more along the lines of what a clinical herbalist would do. I know for the Chinese medicine in particular, there's formulas that have been around for thousands of years that we can get pre-done. And again, something like Bob passed it to me, something that he could speak more on. But also within your daily practice of making your food, how you combine that food, the weeds and the plants that you use, and making sure that you're balancing out something that you're giving to your family is another way of making medicine.
And I think our favorite way to do it is when we can go out and find some Spanish needles, some Bidens, and I'll go out into the back of the clinic and I'll pull some out and I'll show it to the client. I was like, here, go find this in your yard. This is your medicine.
This
you need to
medicine.
Eat this every day. And the price is right. It's free.
They always think we're crazy, too. They're really confused why we're not shoving like a pill.
A bottle at them.
Yeah. They're very confused when we change their food a little bit, or when we have in the back of our Central Ave clinic, we have a healing garden, and we'll run out there and pull something out, run back in with dirt still on it, and they look at us like we're crazy sometimes.
You're talking about actually taking food that grows locally
and weeds.
Well, so taking plants that is outside, potentially in your area, and actually using that as medicine, using the medicinal properties as medicine to make yourself
absolutely
more healthy.
Yes.
And it's one of those things where if you buy a book on herbal medicine, you're going to find all the books of Europe and the Northeast. And really, none of that stuff grows here. Maybe a few. And there were traditional people here long before we arrived. And they had medicine. They took care of their own illnesses and injuries and everything else with the things that grew here. They didn't have great import 10,000 years ago. So there's an aspect of rediscovering some of that medicine. Renee is fourth generation Floridian. I grew up in the Bahamas. And we find a lot of cross-cultural context to a lot of the plant medicine. And so even if we look at the plants of South Florida are very different from the plants that grow here or might grow up in the panhandle.
But some of them still have like the same benefits, right?
Yeah. 100%.
Okay.
Yeah,
perfect.
Absolutely. That I just came back from Ecuador. I have a teacher in Ecuador and I go back down and work with tribes there. And one of her favorite things for me to do, she's born and raised in Ecuador and she's indigenous, but she's also a botanist and has several degrees. And she loves watching me grab something I don't know off the ground and stick it right in my mouth. She's always amused by my lack of fear. And it's because I know that in these latitude lines, in the same environment, that is equal to what I have at home, even if it's a little off.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And again, you are listening to the Sustainable Living Show here on 88.5 Tampa. Today we are talking about herbalism, plants, how to heal your body with it. So make sure to stay tuned for the next, 45 minutes or so as we talk more about it. So, and we have Renee Prince and Bob Linda here in the studio. So if you have any questions for us, for them, you can email dj@wmnf.org and you can call us live at the studio and get your questions answered ASAP at 813-239-9663. John, do you have a question?
Well, maybe we ought to get a definition for what an herb is.
Great point.
Yeah, definitely. You want to feel that?
I was going to say, it's a weed we now understand. it's always funny. An herb can be so many different things. Yeah. And within the Chinese medicine and other traditional medicine, we look at Ayurvedic medicine and such, we actually kind of expand that concept of an herb beyond just plant medicine. Mm-hmm. And we'll look at shells and rocks and other, we'll look at animal parts even that have an herbal action or a medicinal action. Mm-hmm. And so really we're just looking at plants not as a thing that provides just nutrients to fill our belly, but have a specific function to correct an imbalance in the body. And that's how we think of illness. Is an imbalance. And so in a perfect world, we recognize the imbalances before they show up as illness.
So is an herb strictly a plant, or can it be an animal or insect?
Totally. Plants, animals, insects. We use flying squirrel poop in Chinese medicine. We got some weird stuff.
What do you use? That's
menstrual
a little intriguing.
Yes.
Menstrual pain. Okay.
Yeah. And cicada skins. Here, everybody's used to the cicada skin. So in folk herbalism or a wise woman practice or any indigenous practice, it would be something that came from the earth, that we are of value, our bodies to the earth, and we'll go back to the earth, and we're all this big universal energetic balancer. And so it would be anything that was appropriate to pull that into balance.
So you'd make what would you do with a cicada skin?
You could eat them or make a tea, a decoction, an infusion, what you guys would call a tea, but a decoction, an infusion, a paste, an extraction for skin issues.
And it's interesting. It's a concept that is cross-cultural. We see it in all the traditions. Doctrine of signatures, where something looks like something or it's good for that. Mm-hmm. And so the molted skin, when we see that cicada emerge from that old carcass, they're beautiful and shiny and fresh and stretchy.
New.
And so don't we all want that for our skin, mm-hmm. is to be able to molt off, our aging skin totally. and be bright and fresh. Mm-hmm. So we use it specifically for skin itching and skin irritation. I always go back to, it's like, isn't that a cute idea? But the reality is, we say that walnuts are good for the brain because it looks like a brain. It's like, oh, that's such a quaint idea. And so somebody spent a couple $100,000 of our tax money to do some research about the essential fatty acids that are walnuts, and they seem to uniquely reduce inflammation specific to the brain tissue. Help with your brain. What we knew for 10,000 years.
I think we got some phone calls coming in. But,
oh, great.
I was going to ask about homeopathic medicine.
Yeah.
And it's kind of herbal. There's so many herbs in it. And they're funny because it's like poison.
They're poison,
It's really important.
But then also I get a lot of people, not wanting to believe, saying it's not scientific, when in fact it really is.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Not only is it scientific, it's proven, as we were speaking earlier about, we've only had pharmaceuticals, especially in the way that we know them now. I mean, the majority of them came from plants. We've only had pharmaceuticals for 60, 80, 100 years, and yet we have this massively populated earth. Well, how do you think that happened? If it wasn't working, why do we have all these people that are healthy and well and thriving? So obviously it was working way before Big Pharma stepped in and decided to make some money off of the plants of the earth. But then beyond that, as I teach and I travel all over the world, I learn, and it is something that's very readily accessible. that for 80% or more of the populations of the earth, that herbalism is a primary care. And so absolutely it's something that it's only here in America that it's really pushed out. You said the homeopathy. In the European countries, the homeopathy is a huge part of what we're doing. Yeah, a huge part of the normal medical care, for sure.
And it's interesting, you know, certainly within the medical industry, the pharmaceutical industry, it's all about double-blind placebo-controlled studies. And there's a lot of validity. Like, yes, I always say I want 500 years of tradition or double-blind placebo-controlled studies. I don't take a middle ground there. And there are double-blind placebo-controlled studies for a volume of herbs and traditional practices, just not in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. So do you take those studies from other countries and then use them for your own reference here?
Absolutely. It's something that's imperative because our government has put sanctions on plants that we believe to be very medicinal, and those kind of controls are not on other plants in other countries. So they have very valid research, and we know it to be the truth. And then what Bob was saying about the heritage of 500 years, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
Yeah, so that if we have something, him and I get in really comical arguments on plant walks where I say, I don't care what you say, that being in some book somewhere. My grandpa told me to do it, and my great-grandma told me to do it, and guess what? That's 120 years now of knowledge. I'm going to do it. I don't care if it's written in a book somewhere. I mean, some man didn't decide to write it in a book. That doesn't mean it's not valid. Yeah.
And you're listening to the Sustainable Living Show, WMNF 88.5 Tampa, where you hear all things sustainable. Today, we have Renee Prince and Bob Lindy. They're talking herbs and herbalism, and it looks like we have a few callers. Tracy from St. Petersburg.
Hey, Tracy.
Hi. I was just wondering, if you want to learn about herbalism, where's a good place to start?
That's a
loaded question.
Yeah.
We'll send you a check, Tracy.
Get a pen and a piece of paper out, because I'm pretty sure they're going to list like 50,000 events.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So we actually have an herbal program here in St. Petersburg. So it's the Tradition School of Herbal Studies. And we're online at traditionsherbschool.com. And we have everything from free classes to, we have classes there available for the public, and we have from beginner all the way to clinician. And we've got probably one of our favorite events that's coming up on May 4th, which is National Herb Day. So we have herbalists from all over the community. We have weird herbal foods, music, a bunch of vendors. And so May 4th, we go from 10 to 4. And it's a great event that's open to all of the community.
And Tracy, if you want to go...
I live in St. Pete, so that'd be awesome.
That's nice.
Right.
If you want to, if anybody who doesn't live in St. Pete wants to find us on our YouTube channel, we broadcast all the time herb walks, so it's bioregional. We reference other places in the United States, so it doesn't have to be, if you're not here from Florida, if you're a transplant, you'll recognize some of the words we're saying and plants we're talking about. And all of those things that we do as a community outreach, we will post on there for everybody to see. And you can always call up and ask if we are not the teachers for you. We will help you find somebody that's safe and trusted that's in your area for sure.
And one of the things that's really nice, you know, MNF in particular is broadcasted all over the world. It's online. It's archived. And so for people who aren't in our community, can't drive to come to all of our awesome classes, the American Herbalist Guild is a wonderful resource that you can join and have probably 20 years of some of the leading herbalists throughout the country. Their information is archived, their classes, conferences, and other great stuff like that.
Wow, great. Okay, thanks so much.
You're
thanks
welcome.
For calling, Tracy. Appreciate it. And actually, we have an email in, and somebody wants to know, is the monarch chrysalis or caterpillar poop of herbal use?
I have not personally used that. It's interesting. It's specific. The feces of the silkworm is the actual one we use of the worm. So for the monarch, we haven't used that. And oftentimes we look at the plant that they consume. And it's always like, it sounds disgusting, I know. But if you think about it, the most expensive coffee in the world comes from the poop of a civet cat. So that cat eats the coffee bean, pre-digests it for you, so it's just perfect for your morning cup of coffee. So the idea that a caterpillar is eating a particular plant, and the mulberry, which is their primary diet for the silkworm, The mulberry trees themselves have wonderful medicinal properties for everything from pain to colds and flu. So, it's not such a stretch.
So that answer's a maybe? You have to look it up.
Well, the answer is that research. we don't. Bob doesn't have a history of doing it. I will tell you, and he might not even know this exists and it's in his own home. When we had our Celtic teachers here, one of them, him and I, tinctured some monarch butterfly pieces that we had found. And
of the butterfly.
Yeah, so they're in a solvent on the shelf right now with our other plants. And like I said, Bob might not even know that exists, but we were really encouraged by that. And that's somebody who has a longstanding Celtic tradition, and he teaches at a university that he helped found over in Scotland.
Can you explain what a tincture is to our listeners?
Sure. So when we're not going to do something that's very average, like take a plant and put it into water to extract something we're used to, like just tea, like black tea, we use different solvents to specifically pull out a certain chemical or a certain action that we know will happen. So there's several different solvents, a large quantity actually, that we use. So it'd be the equivalent of measuring out and portioning it out and getting the right alcohol or the right glycerin or the correct solvent to pull something secondary out other than what water-soluble items would come.
So... Go ahead, John.
No, I'm sorry. But just give out the phone number again. It's 813-239-9663. Or they can send us an email at dj@wmnf.org. And our text number is, you got that, Frank?
813-433-0885.
Thank you, Frank.
So if you have any questions for Renee Prince or Bob Lindy, herbal experts in the local Tampa Bay area, please give us a call, send us an email, a text, anything, and we will get those questions answered. So you mentioned Western and Chinese herbalism. So obviously there's a difference between them. Can you kind of explain what they are and what the differences are?
You know, it's one of the things where they're not that different. Certainly the area and the culture that they came up from and the unique plants that grow in the areas of China and so forth. And with the Western herbal medicine, we're using more of the local herbs here as well as throughout the U.S., but also European plants. The uniqueness of these is they both have a diagnostic system outside the Western medical construct. So if you go to your doctor and you go, my hip hurts, and he goes, you got arthritis, here's your arthritis pill. If you come to us and say, my hips hurt, I'm going to use a particular language to describe that. I'm going to say, oh, you've got yin deficiency with phlegm, and here's herbs that help with yin deficiency and phlegm, and here's the food you should eat, not eat. And if you go and you see Renee and you say, my hip hurts, she's going to talk very similar in this idea of energetics. We describe disease, I use funny words like yin and yang. She says hot, cold, wet, dry, and deficient in excess. So it's kind of the fun part of it all.
So for me, I want to kind of reiterate what Bob said, but think about it from a standpoint that kind of all of us are used to hearing. So you have the old granny who's got the rheumatiz that acts up when the storm comes in. So because Bob used arthritis for the example. So why that particular elder has pain when the storm's moving in, where somebody would have aches and pains all day long, it has nothing to do with the storm. That's the difference between going to us or going to a medical doctor and having somebody give them the blanket thing for arthritis, that this is just going to help, and why some people get disappointed with their care. If we look at the energetics of what's going on, and Bob said it, I'm not going to use the same languaging, and I don't have the 500-year-old formulas because we are so diverse in our plants versus what came specifically out of China for this medicine. So we're going to all have a little bit different plant, but we're going to look at it the same way in that the weather affected that, so that's different than athletic affecting it or a food affecting that same arthritis.
So both Western and Chinese herbalism are both going to be able to kind of address any sort of issues. So if people are coming in with digestive issues, if they're coming in with migraines, mm-hmm. they're coming in with arthritis, these are things that you can address and try to cure naturally?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's one of the funny things that we always joke we should have called it the clinic of last resort, because that's more of what we see. Mm-hmm. Nobody comes in with a sniffle. And our idea is it's very different from the mindset of the Western practitioners. Western medications are great. They will save your life. If you get hit by a truck, go to the hospital. But the reality is they tend to mask symptoms. Even when they know what's wrong, they're not curing things. And so for us, it's not that we cure disease. We recognize imbalances in the body. And our job is to create balance. And then a bunch of symptoms go away. And it's a very different mindset. And ultimately, we like to put the power back into the client's hands, because diet, lifestyle, spiritual practices, all of those have an impact on our health. And it's probably the other thing, Chinese medicine has kind of gotten rid of a lot of the spiritualism, where Western herbal medicine has kept more of it in. And when you think about it, you've got a finger specialist, you got a knee specialist, you got a heart specialist, and all of these things are separated. And for us, we say that all of this is connected. We can't separate the human body into pieces. But in the same sense, you also have to go to the psychologist and you have to go to the priest as a different healing person. And again, those things aren't separable. What we think affects us. We talk about our gut as the second brain and the largest producer of serotonin. And so how can we separate mental health, emotional health, and spiritual health? All of those are impactful for our happiness and health as a human.
Wonderful. And you're listening to the Sustainable Living Show at WMNF Tampa with John Butts, Tanya Vidovic. We're here with Renee Prince and Bob Lindy, herbalists. And it looks like we have a few phone calls coming in. Ron from Land O'Lakes, do you have a question?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to share an anecdote about something you said earlier about the plants on the ground and how they benefit us. Years ago, I lived up in Winter Park and I worked for an aid organization. I ran the transportation department. I would bring clients into the building for support groups and counseling and case management. And one day I was waiting for one of my clients' wives to come out of her session. And this gentleman from Jamaica looked at the fence and said, "Oh, look what's growing on the top of the fence." And he went to the fence and he started just pulling like handfuls.
Yeah.
Surrecy,
yeah.
Overgrowth weed.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts literally shoving it in his mouth.
Yeah.
And he's like, "This is what this grows in Jamaica too." And again, it was what you said, it was a different version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But this helped soothe his stomach.
Yeah.
And I don't think I need to explain to anyone in our listening audience what AIDS and suffering from AIDS might do to a person's stomach. So it was always such a relief to bring him up there and have him show other people, you know, how to handle this. And he would take it home and make a tea with it, or he would just eat it and munch on it. And it was just, you know, one of the many benefits I got from helping people at that point.
That's...
So I wanted to share that anecdote with you. To support what you were
Thank you so much, because that is such a core part of our mission, vision, and value, and especially for me who grew up here, and I'm so proud of my heritage, that for you to be able to help somebody just from walking up to the fence and listening to their heritage medicine, that's wonderful. That's Cerasi, it's bitter melon, or tropical melon, like what is another name? Do you know?
It's bitter melon, it's not the Chinese variety, it's Mortica.
Balsam apple.
Mm-hmm. Puerto Rico, it's known as Queen de Amor. Mm-hmm. And variations of Cerasi in Jamaica and some of the other West Indian islands.
And that particular herb has a great healing effect for so many things around us. And it's free and it's there in your yard. And it's something that you don't have to depend on anybody to get. And with a little bit of coaching from an herbalist that will help you with dosing, you would have great effect and benefit from it. That's a wonderful thing.
And so you
I'm in Lakeland now, and you might see me on May 4th. Thank you.
Nice. We would love to see you. Come talk to us.
Thank you, Ron, for calling in. So, and you guys actually do walks too, right? So that would actually, that would be amazing, where you can actually go and lead people on walks so you see the plants that are growing locally in your area. Mm-hmm. And then you guys have the knowledge to actually tell people how this can heal them, right? Because you're, I guess you heal people naturally. That is pretty much what you do. So that's amazing. And we actually have a email, and it says, Rachel from Pinellas Park just wanted to say that she has seen Dr. Bob in several student clinics at Traditions, and he is such a refreshing alternative to Western. So there you go. You got a, you have a...
Thank you so much.
Fans.
Yeah, and it's funny. For over 15 years now, we've offered intern clinics. So On Monday nights, I supervise acupuncture interns from the Sarasota Acupuncture School, East West College of Natural Medicine. On Tuesday nights, Renee supervises the senior Western herb students who are in their last 8 months of school. Mm-hmm. And then on Wednesday nights, I supervise the Chinese herbal students who are in their advanced sessions there.
And we actually have another email from Charlie saying muscle manipulation and pressure points can be painful to rid calcium deposits. Is there an herb that can do that?
Bob's going to definitely answer because I can see him taking a breath to pontificate, but for sure. But the reason why you have those deposits is the issue, not the pain. So we would evaluate your entire body system and figure out why you are having those deposits and why your body wasn't naturally moving them out and help to eliminate it that way. And there would be many things that we could go to, especially in formulation where the plants work together and work with your body.
And it's I'm going to try not to come across badly here, but water is a great source, and most of us don't drink enough. But I'll add to that, that's really the difference between seeing an herbalist and just doing some Google searches. The books really just talk about this herb is for that, that herb is for that. And that's not the way herbal medicine is practiced. Ultimately, herbs are put together in formulation and combination, and they're so specific to the individual. And knowing what herbs put together for your particular imbalance as to not that you have calcium deposits, that's actually a symptom. Why you have calcium deposits is the root of the imbalance. And if we fix the how come, not only do the calcium deposits get better, but a slew of other symptoms that maybe you went first to the massage therapist or the physical therapist that discovered those really painful owie spots.
So the long answer is just that, yes, there's many that will help.
And we have another email. We have a bunch of emails coming in.
Awesome.
And again, if you want to send an email, it's dj@wmnf.org. And if you have any questions, give us a call at 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF Sustainable Living Show. Our guests today are Renee Prince and Bob Lindy, and we are talking herbs and how to heal your body naturally. But we do have an email from Peter from Indian Shores, and he says, herbs are all fine and dandy, but I just named turmeric and beet powder in my subject line that are supposed to be fabulous for us as humans. But if you think about it, how many herbs am I supposed to take to stay alive and live a healthy life?
That's something that definitely, like, I just overstepped Bob getting ready to say something because it's a huge sore point with me. The fact of the matter is you're supposed to be eating this to begin with. Our food is supposed to be diverse. We're supposed to be eating weeds and we're not supposed to have monocropped items. And it's not a matter of taking a turmeric pill or taking some beet powder to chase in a symptom. It's a matter of this was part of our seasonal harvestable food, and so that anomaly wouldn't be there. If we were actually eating in a way that was diverse, all of those herbs, in quotation marks, are in our food in our everyday life. It's only during an acute emergency that we would need to go to a special formula.
So instead of taking beet powder in...
You would be eating roasted beet tops with...
As a part of your daily...
Absolutely.
And so this is a part of your... This should be a part of your diet.
I can safely say I've never ever recommended turmeric to anyone for any condition whatsoever. But I encourage people to eat curry all the time.
Absolutely.
And I have prescribed that to folks that, like, get a sweet curry sauce. It's yummy. Throw that in your scrambled eggs. It's awesome.
In the communities that curry is very present at, nobody's running around taking supplements or large dose. It's part of their life because it grows well there.
So this is all great information. Thank you. I mean, for bringing the emails in. It's the listeners asking amazing questions that actually is bringing forth this information. So thank you guys.
For
Please
sure.
continue to have this coming in. So what sort of what can people do? Like, if you were talking about things that people can do, everyday people who maybe not that don't have the knowledge or enough time, like, what is the basic information that people can take steps to make themselves more healthy?
So the first thing is, when you come into clinic, I'm not encouraging everybody to come. Of course, come if you want. But when you come into clinic, one of the things that we provide you with is something called a wellness plan. That's going to be something that addresses what you just said. It goes all the way from walking and smelling a flower to incorporating foods. But something I have found, especially with my cancer care clients,
that's a really big deal and a super easy thing to remember, is if every single day you just ate the rainbow. And what I mean is, once you have your brownish, milky colored oatmeal in the morning, that's the last time today you can eat something that color. If you only just ate the rainbow all day long, and
so
I'm not,
beige doesn't count.
It counts just one time, which means that you got to start searching for your diverse rainbow food. And I don't mean Skittles. That once you eat the rainbow, if you only just thought about eating the rainbow and have you had that color today, you would get tons of things you weren't previously getting in your diet.
Oh, man. You know, and that brings me just to a story, just super quick. I remember going on a call once, and this woman was feeding her child candy oranges.
Yes.
And she was like, eat your fruit, eat your oranges. And I'm like, oh, that's not actual oranges. That's actually candy.
It's one of the reasons I love the Sustainable Living Show, is the reality is the closer we eat our food to being pulled from the earth, the healthier we're going to be. And so a beet powder versus John growing a beet and yanking it out of the ground.
Yeah,
there's
absolutely
a big difference between those two animals, and they both are amazing things, but there's so many things that come from that coming alive out of the ground and being mm-hmm. cooked that day, that everything from the probiotics, so you don't have to take a probiotic pill, to the sulfur, now you don't need your MSM, and so many other compounds
your
that break down the second that you yeah. pull that out of the ground, they start mm-hmm. to degrade. So really eating fresh, sustainable, local foods is vital to our health and our nutrition.
And not hard. It's not difficult.
And you're listening to Sustainable Living, WMNF Tampa, and it looks like we have the phone lines are packed. So let's get to some awesome phone calls. We have Peter from Palm Harbor. Are you there, Peter?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you? I have a quick question. I don't want to take too much of your time. I heard you talking about acupuncture. I've been a runner my whole life, and about a year or two ago, I came down with Achilles tendonitis. Mm-hmm. Went to the doctor, and they said, oh, have you ever taken Cipro? Yeah. I had dysentery a couple of times. I was in Peru and a few other places. Yeah. So, anyway, I did not know that at the time, or I probably would have said, you know, declined it. But anyway, I ended up with Achilles tendonitis mm-hmm. because of taking antibiotics. And I think that that's important to...
And sadly, you're lucky that you didn't get a ruptured Achilles tendon.
Yeah.
Actually, tendon ruptures are one of the most common mm-hmm. side effects from Cipro and that entire class of antibiotics.
Levaquin as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's always a scary thing people don't know. And Cipro's handed out like candy canes now.
Mm-hmm. So we definitely...
Yeah, it's insane.
We definitely have protocols that involve dealing with that. It's a huge epidemic now because those used to be really, really very serious medicines that were barely given, and now they're given constantly. So we're seeing this influx of what's basically Cipro syndrome in that we're having tendon issues. So you would definitely benefit from a clinical herbalist that could bring your connective tissues back into balance by nourishing them and having them be less brittle.
And, you know, we're really excited. We've got so many of our graduates now are working within the community. It's like, you don't have to come see us. Mm-hmm. And I would say, although acupuncture is helpful for that, and ultimately to start to heal the side effects from that Cipro, mm-hmm. really work with supplements, work with an herbalist that starts to repair that damage that's there.
And I've suffered from that same exact thing, and so I've helped myself with it, so I'm not just speaking in theory, that we see this kind of thing all of the time and have great success with it. So if you can't get to us, we can get you to somebody that's qualified in your area.
Yeah, I have a running mate from my running club, and she's an acupuncturist.
Great.
She keeps saying, hey, well, why don't you let me stick needles in you?
We do that sometimes, yeah.
Let me research this a little first, you know, because I hate needles.
No, I'm an acupuncturist. I hate needles, too. I don't feel a thing when I put them in people. But I will say, especially with the symptoms and the inflammation that you've got going on, the acupuncture will be a great help. And, you know, if you're lucky, she's actually utilizing herbal medicine as well and can really start to correct some of those imbalances that Cipro caused.
Well, Peter,
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling in, Peter. And actually, we have a full deck of calls, so let's go to Robin in Tarpon Springs. Hello, Robin.
Hi, this is Robin. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about saw palmetto berries. And I've been making tinctures and studying herbs for many, many years, and it's, I just do it for enjoyment and just to learn about different things, healing modalities and so forth. But one thing that's always fascinated me was the saw palmettos in Florida and the story about how when people go out to get saw palmetto for herbs, that it's basically like finding wild ginseng or something, that they get picked way too early, that they get picked when they're green. They go from green to orange to black. So if you buy saw palmetto in a health food store, it may be from a green palmetto berry, it may be from an orange, you know, but they don't get reach their full potency until they're black. So I shared this story with a friend of mine, and one day he came and he said that he had a saw palmetto. He had some acreage, and he said he has a saw palmetto tree that's about that has berries on it. Would I be interested in them? And I said yes. So I watched it like a hawk, and when they and I kept wanting to pick them because I thought someone else is going to see them, they're going to snag them. And but I waited until they were black and harvested the berries and made a lot of the tincture. And but I just couldn't use all the berries, so I put them in a container and put them in the freezer. So my question to you is, how long will those berries be viable, and is there some way to tell if they're still good? The tincture that I made has had great success with one person, my brother. Most other people are kind of afraid. Well, two people take it, actually. Most people are like, oh, I don't know.
So, you know, you raise a lot of really good questions, and the most important probably is knowing not just the herb, but how and when to harvest will completely dramatically change the effectiveness of that herb. So right on for knowing that. I have a, my students are always baffled. We always have all of our clients come in and like bring all your supplements in, and it's, I don't know every brand. So we literally open up the capsules and we sit there and start licking all the powder that's inside the capsules. And I don't need to tell you, saw palmetto does not taste good. It tastes like rotten, moldy soap. And so that's how you tell. And there's a really cool name for it, organoleptic testing. So pull those suckers out of the freezer, let them thaw out and chew it up and try not to break your tooth. But if it tastes like that, then it's still good. And if not, then it's time to compost those things. And the nice thing about tinctures really have an indefinite shelf life. So if you're using an alcohol tincture, then pretty much that's going to be safe. And you're doing a fresh tincture, so you want to make sure that you're using a high enough proof of alcohol. And I'll say for everybody else, the reason she talked about it being kind of like ginseng, it kind of is. There's two forms of testosterone. There's free testosterone, which is the stuff we want, both men and women. And then we have dehydrotestosterone, which is kind of used up. The saw palmetto, besides helping with BPH, benign prostate hyperplasia, helps process out that used up testosterone. And that's important for both men and women, women especially with PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. It's vital for them to make sure that they're processing out that testosterone properly.
And just real quick before you go, I encourage you to yank them all out of the freezer and tincture them in a gallon jar, like a pickle jar, as quickly as you can, because you have a real find and a jewel that you have them and you know that it's working. And like Bob said, they'll sit in a tincture of a high-proof alcohol indefinitely. The rule is that you're supposed to be able to give a good tincture to your grandchild. Yeah. So that's how long they last.
And a lot of people don't know, right now saw palmetto is being controlled by the state of Florida. That we used to be that you'd have people run around just grabbing saw palmetto berries off every bush in every park. And so they're actually enforcing that, and they're issuing licenses in the same way they do ginseng.
So you have a gold mine.
So yeah, the fact that your friend is letting you grab a couple
good
of
job.
Those, that is a wonderful, wonderful find.
Well, I'll tell you, I made about 2 gallons of tincture.
Wow.
And I give them to my brother, takes them because he had, problems with peeing too much in the night, basically.
Yep. It's time to set up shop and sell that stuff.
I'm not licensed to sell it. I don't know who to sell it to or how to sell it.
Come to school. We'll teach you.
or gift it to a friend.
We do laws.
If I'm going to taste the berries, like you said, if they taste like they're good, I'd just be let happy to know. Bring them to you guys and let you use them.
There you go.
What a blessing.
We'll use those in student clinic.
I've gallons of it.
That's a good point. She brings up a good point. Everybody who knows us knows this. For years, my family and I helped run a food pantry and a VA outreach in a community street medic unit. And so when we say we have clinic, we try to give away as much as possible and help people.
And more importantly, bring it to us. We'll actually get it to Herbalists Without Borders. We now have a local chapter, mm-hmm. Herbalists Without Borders, run by one of our students. And they're starting to arrange for some outreach in our community here. Mm-hmm. So that'll go to good use if you've got more than you can use. And that's important for everybody.
So thank you.
You're very welcome. And once again, before y'all leave, be sure you say when you're, I didn't catch the very first of the show, where you're located and get some.
We're going to make sure to, yeah, definitely. Great point. We're going to make sure to get all their information and post it on the Sustainable Living Facebook page so that if anybody has any questions about it and how to contact them, we're going to make sure to post that. So thank you so much for your call, Robin. We have three more calls. We have three more calls, so we're going to try to get to them because obviously this is a wealth of knowledge that we have in our studio here. So we want to answer all the questions here on Sustainable Living Show, WMNF Tampa. So what about, let's hear from Al from Seminole.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm wondering about what they call the sacred goldenrod. Mm-hmm. At least that's what some people call it. Mm-hmm. And if it has any beneficial effects for Alzheimer's.
Hmm. I don't know that I've ever been told. So this is Renee speaking. I'm many generations here, farm family on both sides, and definitely taught to be practitioners on both sides. And we definitely use goldenrod, love goldenrod for many different reasons. I've never heard it used for that. But what I will tell you is in the context that Bob was speaking, the hot, cold, wet, and dry, when we see dementia, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, we see a phlegm factor where we have an increase of phlegm in the body. And for the Alzheimer's, it would be phlegm in the mind, like you can't quite make your way back to where you were. You can't quite remember. And I know that goldenrod is definitely used in phlegm conditions for phlegm actions. So I don't think it would be a far stretch. Never been studied specifically that I've seen. We use organizations like PubMed to try to follow this study around the world, but I haven't seen one for that, but I can see that being of an asset for sure.
And I would say if you've got a study or an article, please email that to us. I'd like to read more about it and give me something to chase it down a little bit, because that does sound interesting. We do see a lot of people struggling with that.
Well, this is what they call sacred goldenrod. It's the tall, mm-hmm. Single stalk one.
Yeah, I know exactly. And if anybody's from around here and knows goldenrod, they'll never believe it's a goldenrod. They'll say, that's not it, that's not it, because it looks so specific and tall. They get taller than me, and I'm the size of an average man. Mm-hmm. And so it's always astounding when you see a good one out that you're like, oh, that's this beautiful holy plant for sure.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know exactly what you're talking about with that.
Mine gets about 7 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we'll check into that more.
Well, just one more question. Mm-hmm. How's the best way to use that? I mean, the flowers or what?
So there's a great argument in our community, but I have been taught by my elders all the way back to the 1800s, because I knew my great-grandmother, who was born in the 1800s, to only use it without the flower. And that's because it can cause the problems. So something that we learn in shamanic practice, I'm trained in shamanic practice, is what is coming is going. So if it can cause the problem, it can stop the problem. If it can stop the problem, it can cause it. So we don't want to use it when the flower is up, because it can cause that phlegm condition, cause an allergy. But there's argument in our community, and people who I honor and trust also use the flower. So as far as I'm concerned, we use it when it's not in bloom.
Okay. And so you use the leaves and the stalk?
The aerial parts. I've never had research about the root, the aerial parts. So that would be the leaves and stalk, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything about the root either. Okay, just as a final thought, this plant was taken from the sacred ground down in St. Pete.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Nice.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you for calling in. Mm-hmm. I think we have time for one more call. Let's go with Gulf Beaches. Mary, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hey, Mary.
Hello. Hi, this is Marie from Indian Rocks Beach.
Hi.
Hey, Marie, how are you?
Good. The question I have is, how do you feel about pickled vegetables?
They're being pickled.
Yum.
Freshly. Do we lose the value?
No, I am so old Florida cracker excited about pickled vegetables. That I try to tell people that if you have a difficult person at home, i.e. husband, finicky mother-in-law, whatever that may be, you just take this bag of herbs and you shove that in that salad dressing bottle, and that's the equivalent. So I tell everybody to save their like Clausen's jar, try to get organic, and then just start shoving everything in it that's possibly medicinal if you can't get a normal person to eat the medicine, because it's a great extractor. Both the fat and the oil that comes with it, as well as the vinegar, it's just a spectacular extractor of medicine. I think it's wonderful. If you add into that a ferment so that you're getting good pre and probiotics, that's just an amazing way to continue to eat your medicine every single day. Everything that goes in your mouth should be medicine.
Most of those spices in there are good digestive herbs, yes, as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just to be sure, I think you should bring some by so we can test the medicinal quality of those.
Maybe a couple jars full.
Feel free to drop them off at WMNF, too.
Where do you get the you said ferment. What do you mean by that exactly?
Oh, my gosh. It's a whole other show. So what I mean is, in the past and in every culture that I have ever studied, we have live vegetables going on. And what I would have been taught is that it was a way to store the vegetables and keep them past the time when we had harvest. And what it's doing is cultivating and creating its own healthy gut bacteria that we're missing by washing and cleaning our vegetables.
And I was going to say, there's a lot of great classes around the community about how to ferment vegetables. And some of them, I'm sure in your community, in St. Pete for sure, there's St. Pete Ferments is out there doing really good work teaching people how to ferment veggies.
And just a secondary layer of that.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And actually, if Ann from Tampa wants to do one more quick question, then we have time. You have about one more minute, Ann.
Okay. It is very quick. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to say, please remind people to be responsible about anything that they harvest.
Yes.
In the saw palmetto, that was a real problem with the parks for a while. And I was also alarmed to hear somebody say, use a monarch chrysalis. I hope nobody is suggesting that we butterfly chrysalises, especially monarchs. They have enough trouble.
I think they were referring to the outer shell that was left over, because we talked about the outer shell of the cicada. So I definitely hope that nobody would do that. But that's a great observation. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for calling in.
Sure.
And we get into our final minutes here on the Sustainable Living Show, WMNF, and Bob Lindy, Renee Prince, thank you so much for coming in. Do you want to maybe go through how our listeners could get in touch with you?
Sure. Most important, check out our calendar at traditionsherbschool.com, or you can email us at traditionsherbschool@gmail.com. We've got lots of great classes coming up, and most importantly, May 4th is National Herb Day, and we're having a heck of a good party in St. Pete at our clinic.
Renee?
Yeah, I was just going to say basically the same thing. We have herb walks that have been filmed for the local area that you can go see on our YouTube channel, which would be Tradition School of Herbal Studies. Come by the clinic, Acupuncture and Herbal Therapies, if you want to ask us any questions about something you've heard today.
Yeah. And the address is 2520 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, Florida, 33705. Or you can call us at the clinic at 727-551-0857, or the school phone number 727-318-2505.
Thank you so much for the calls. We appreciate the community being involved.
Hey, well, thank you too so much for
what you do. John, yeah, Tanya.
To doing the community. And I was just going to say that we had, every year we seem to do a fermenting program, and we get sauerkraut, stand or cats, and actually St. Pete Ferments have been on that. And it's on our archives, great shows. And
and we love Xander.
Is it? 4 cups of water and 2 tablespoons of salt, and it does anything.
Yep, absolutely. It's really easy. Absolutely.
And one final thing I was going to say, of course, well, one thing we didn't mention, we had a pledge drive, and we wanted to really appreciate and thank all the people that, that donated to the radio station and to this program. And I always comes to mind when people talk about different diets, like the Mediterranean diet and this kind of diet, and always think about what we need is a Seminole diet.
There you go, yeah.
But thank you so much. Any final comments, Tanya?
Well, if anybody wants to listen to our archives, and that's something that, that we kind of say listen online, but all of our shows are archived. So if you want to go to WMNF.org, you can listen to any of our past shows, which is a great resource, because if you want to learn more about fermenting, like for instance, we brought up fermenting on this show, but we referenced one of our past shows. So if you want to go back and listen to our show on fermenting in its entirety, that's a great option. So, and also, I mean, again, thanks for listening. You can learn more about what we're doing on Facebook, on It's Sustainable Living, WMNF, on Facebook. And then you can, you know, we'll remind you when to listen and what events are coming up and local sustainability in the area.
Hey, and thanks a lot, Frank. You did a great job.
Oh, everybody's so welcome. This has been interesting. I've learned a lot.
Good.
And also, thanks, Carol, on the phone. She took all of our phone calls today, so thank you, Carol.